The tochacha that we read a couple of places in the Torah is a very, very harsh read. There are minhagim in Klal Yisrael to read it in a very quick and like an undertone. Mishmur makes fun of this a little bit, that makes fun of that, at least the minhag that people had to skip the tocha, that he compares it, if you're about to be attacked by a bear, to just close your eyes. Right? What do they say if a bear is about to attack you? I don't know, daven, say shema, whatever, cry. But closing your eyes is not going to help. No, curl up, you say, whatever it is, whatever you're supposed to do. But closing your eyes is not going to do it. So the tocha is something we have to listen to, and we have to realize that there's a certain standard of behavior that's expected of us, and that we pay the price for it. And the punishments that are described in the tocha really would defy imagination if not for the fact that we've had Jewish history. And we've seen all of it actually happen, and strongly in the last century, in the middle part of the 20th century, with the Holocaust, all of the horrible things that are described, kol choli, kol makeh, asher, everything is going to happen. Even asher lo kasu b'sefer HaTorah zos, yalem Hashem alecha ad yishmidcha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring to us till we reach the point of terrible, terrible destruction. So how does the tocha end? So you would imagine one of two ways, right? Either it would end with some divrei nechama, or it would end with the most intense form of cursing and of horrible things that could happen. It sort of though ends with a thud, right? What's the ultimate suffering that's predicted at the end? You're going to go back to Mitzrayim in the very path that Hashem said that you're not going to be allowed to go back anymore, meaning you're not supposed to go back to Mitzrayim, but we're going to end up being shipped down to Mitzrayim on boats. Vismakartem sham la'ivecha la'avadim l'shvachos, and we're going to be sold there as servants and as shvachos to our enemies. Ve'in kona, but no one's going to be interested in buying us. No one's going to want us when we're sold down to Mitzrayim. Now, why is the curse of returning to Mitzrayim worse than everything else that was already described? And to the contrary, it doesn't seem that bad, because we're not actually going to end up as slaves, because no one's going to want us. So if we're not actually going to even end up in slavery in Mitzrayim again, so what is it about that pasuk that somehow signifies the end, the pinnacle of the tocha? I don't know if you call it pinnacle, but the the final phrase. And it seems, while the Tocha in Parshas B'Chukosai ends with words of Nechama, which again, as we said, makes sense, there is no cheerful ending in our Tocha. There is no Divrei Nechama. So why does this Tocha end with something negative but not super negative? Meaning, what exactly is the tone exactly that we're trying to strike? So there's a famous Yesod of the Kuzari, where the Kuzari lists the different basic levels of creation. And this is a basic philosophical idea that in the Bria itself, there aren't just many creations, there are different categories of creation. There are different levels of creation. There's Domeim, there's Tzomeach, there's Chai, there's Medaber, and the Kuzari adds there's also a fifth level called Yisrael. Meaning, Domeim is that which has no life to it whatsoever. A rock, it doesn't move, it doesn't shrink, it doesn't grow. Nothing happens, doesn't require any nourishment. Then above that is Tzomeach, that which, like plant life, that which can grow, that which can become. It can develop based on the nourishment it receives. Then you have beyond plant life, you have Chai, you have living creatures, you have animals, you have birds, you have fish, you have living things. And then beyond that, you have medaber, humanity. You have people who are able to formulate thoughts and express those thoughts with words. A parrot, or what is that the kind of bird? A parrot is one that repeats everything. Right? A parrot is not a medaber, because it's not formulating thoughts and expressing those thoughts. It just has this knack of being able to repeat the sounds that it hears. But a medaber, that we're able to formulate thoughts, and express them in words and sentences, that's a different level of bria. And then Yisrael, is this other level of Bria, not just a different kind of person, but a different level of creation. And the Kuzari explains that, you know, what makes something a different category versus just a better version within the same category? Meaning, if you're going to say that Midaber is its own category, how do I know Midaber is just one category? Maybe there should be a category of, Midabrim who are... who have an IQ below a certain level and IQ above a certain level, or medabrim who are, under a certain height or above a certain height. Meaning, maybe there are more refined medabrim, right? Maybe within Sameach, a blade of grass, not so impressive. A rose, very beautiful. Maybe those are different categories. Who's to say that they belong in the same category? What determines what's in the different category and what's in the same category? And the Kuzari explains that it's very simple to determine what makes a different category. And he says that if when it loses its unique quality, it doesn't just land in the category beneath it, but it gets degraded to the point where it's not even in the category beneath it. That's how you know that that quality defines it as being in a different category. For example, a tzomeach that loses its koach hatzmicha does not become a domi. Right? If you were to cut a flower, so after some time it will die, it will shrivel, and it will just disappear. Right? So as opposed to a rock, which is always going to be there, rock solid, but the tzomeach will shrivel up. A bal chai loses its chiyus, it doesn't become a tzomeach. Right? If you kill an animal, you don't then just water it and give it sunlight and watch it grow as it no longer has chiyus, but it's still tzomeach. No, it then becomes just a dead carcass, and it doesn't have the ability to be in the category even beneath it. A medaber that loses his koach hadibur is not able to sustain himself. A bal chai can live a regular life and scrounge for food and be able to, but someone who's not able to function as a medaber normally needs other people to care for him in order to be able to survive. And therefore, a Jew, if a Yehudi is in its own category, if he doesn't behave like a Jew in the observance of Torah and mitzvos, he becomes almost subhuman. Almost worse than a regular person. I remember when I was here as a Talmud in Yeshiva, Rav Kahn gave a Musar Shmuz about what it is to be a Jew without Torah. When Rav Kahn, I don't know if it still is this way, does he ever give the Musar Shmuz? When he gave the Musar Shmuz in the old Beis Medrash, like standing room only, not even standing, you just like Omdim Tzfufim, everyone came, he would have a catchy title very often, and usually he said something that that shook us up, in one way or another. And I just told him when we had Rabbi Berman had the Rosh Yeshiva and their wives were invited to dinner on Monday night at Rabbi Berman's house in Teaneck. So, and I was invited also. So I saw Rabbi Kahn and I said, I was just at this chasana on Sunday and I was in Chicago and we were talking. I met some old chevra from YU from when I was there as a Talmud 20 years ago, and they were reminiscing about Rav Kahn's shmuzin, and they were saying, like, word for word, remembered things he said, like phrases that he said. So I said, it's pretty amazing, 20 years later, he said, wow, chacham mizaru b'derechem, if people are going to remember 20 years later exactly what you said, then you got to be very, very careful about what you say, lest you think he's not thought out about what he's saying. It's not just spur of the moment. Everything is very thought out. So, was it, oh yeah, he gave a shmooze about what it is to be a Jew without Torah. I believe it was the Kurt Cobain shmooze. I don't know if any of you ever heard that one, but Kurt Cobain was the lead singer of a group called Nirvana, which was a very popular Seattle punk band back in the day. They were coming up at the same time as Pearl Jam, and then Kurt Cobain committed suicide. So Rav Kahn spoke about Kurt Cobain. He spoke about, I think it was to MTA. It was to MTA students. But I think in that shmooze, he spoke about what it is when a Jew is divorced from Torah. And he found newspaper clippings of stories or old Time magazine articles or something of stories of the Russian mafia. And he was reading what the Russian mafia is like. And he was describing how the Italian mafia are like it's like child's play compared to the right. You know, Italian mafia, if you do something they don't like the first time, they'll bust your kneecaps. And maybe a few more times, then they'll kill you, right? The Russian mafia will kill all your children first, make you watch it, and then tear you apart limb from limb. Like, meaning that's the kind of thing they were describing. Like, they are terribly frightening people. Then he started reading some of the names of the Russian mafiosos, and, like, they were all Jewish names. He said, this is what happens when a Jew is pulled apart from Torah. He was saying that a Jew doesn't just become, like a regular other person. A Jew is pulled apart from Torah mitzvahs, meaning, he said, can we conduct an experiment where you take an entire community of Jewish people and completely rip them apart from Torah mitzvahs for decades and see what happens? Like, we would never conduct such an experiment. But he said, Rabbi Sai, such an experiment has happened al korochenu, right? That's the lesson he used. I remember clearly that the experiment happened, and that was the result of the experiment. And that's what Gzari is saying, that when a Jew loses what makes us special, when any level of Bria loses what makes us special, you know, Rav Shechter always likes to say that they used to say in Brisk that there's a sixth level of Bria. Reb Chaim, he wasn't just like a special Jew, he was a different level of Bria entirely. Okay, but when a Jew loses that thing that makes him special, he doesn't just become a regular guy. There's a Gemara in Ksubas, Daf Samach Vav and Beis, where the Gemara tells us about the aftermath of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara tells us how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the great leader of the time in the aftermath of the Churban, and who really had to teach us how to live a post-Churban life, which we had no idea. We never experienced Jewish life without a Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara tells us Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was rochev al chamar v'yotzim Yerushalayim. He was riding on a donkey and he was surveying the damage. You know, like after a hurricane, the president goes in a helicopter and looks and sees, so how much FEMA money is going to go to the affected area. Yeah, you have to deal with what just happened. So in the aftermath of the Churban, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was surveying what was going on. His talmidim were following after him. And he saw a young woman who was pulling out sa'orim. What do we know about sa'orim? Sa'orim is Michael Behema. And she wasn't just pulling out clean sa'orim. She was pulling sa'orim mi ben galalei behemas and shalarvayim. She was pulling out from the excrement of animals that belonged to Arabs. These animals would relieve themselves, and there was undigested barley in their excrement, and that's what she was pulling out to try to clean off so she could have something to eat. I mean, can you imagine the starvation where a person sinks to that point, where that's how desperate the person is? But as she's doing this horrible thing, meaning this terribly degrading thing, Kivan Shirasso, so she sees the holy Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai nis'atva b'sa'ara va'amda b'fanav. So she pulls herself together and she stands up. Amra lo, Rebbe parnaseini. She says, Rebbe, I need parnasa, I need food. Amra lo, biti, mi'at. So he says, who are you? Amra lo, bas Nakdimun ben Gurion. She says, I'm the daughter of Nakdimun ben Gurion. What happened to all the money from your father's house? Nakdim ben Gurion is one of the richest men in the world. So Amr lo Rebbe, lo kadein matlin matlo b'Yerushalayim melech mamun chaser va'amri lo chesed. Don't you know the mashal that they always give, that the melech, the preservative of mamon, is chaser, is to give some of it up or to do chesed with the money? My father's house didn't give enough tzedakah. They didn't give. And the Gemara asks, what do you mean they didn't give? Well, we know that they did give. Yeah, but not as much as they should have. They fell short of, in honor of Why You Giving Day. I guess it's over already. But, you know, they didn't give what they should have given. And because they didn't give what they should have given, so that's why they lost all their money. And then Bachar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, at the end of the conversation, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai cries out, Va'amar, what does he say? Ashreichem Yisrael. How fortunate Klal Yisrael is. Bizman shos ritzono shel makom in kol uma v'lashon shalat us ben. When we do the Ratzon Hashem, no nation has any power over us, any sway over us. O bizman she'enos in ritzono shel makom, mesurin biyad uma shvelo v'lo biyad uma shvelo biyad behemton shel uma shvelo. And when we don't do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only are we handed over to these lowly nations, we're even beneath the behemos of these lowly nations. And the Achronim were bothered by the expression Ashreichem Yisrael. Meaning, he said two things. That when we do the Ratzon Hashem, we're above everybody, and we lead the way, we're an Or LaGoyim, and we're an example for the world to follow, v'chule v'chule. Okay, that sounds like an Ashreichem Yisrael. But there was a second half to the sentence. And when we don't do the Ratzon Hashem, we're beneath even the behemoths of the lowest people. So how is that an Ashreichem Yisrael? Shouldn't he have used some other way to express it? Where's the Ashreichem Yisrael in the second half of the sentence? And the Maral explains that that's also an Ashreichem Yisrael. Because that's the raya that our Maila is a real Maila. That the Maila of being a Jew is not just, you know, different levels within the same category. But that it's its own category. We're not just people who are doing the wrong thing. We become subhuman when we fail to do the Ratzon Hashem. And that's an indication that we have our own category of creation. That's an indication that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has endowed us with a certain potential that we just can't run away from. That we can't just deny and say, I just want to blend in and be like everybody else. That we have this Kedushas Yisrael. You know, it's not popular to talk about Kedushas Yisrael nowadays, because people are uncomfortable with the idea of an Am HaNivchar, but these are basic Jewish beliefs, that we are a chosen people, that there's a sense of Kedushas Yisrael. Now, of course, Kedushas Yisrael does not mean that we have a sense of entitlement or a sense of superiority in the conventional sense. It means a sense of responsibility. Right, it means that we have a sense, a greater level of achrayus, and that's the way we're supposed to view our special Kedushas Yisrael. But based on that idea, based on this concept, Rav Nissen Kaplan Shlita suggested that that's what's going on at the end of the Tochacha. The Tochacha tells us that essentially that there's no turning back. Hashem has elevated us, He's distinguished us, He took us out of Mitzrayim, He made us His nation. And lest we think that if we ignore the Torah, we could just back out on the deal, and we could just go back to the way things were, the Tocha tells us, yeah, where were you before all this happened? You were Avadim in Mitzrayim. There's no going back to that. Even when you don't do the Ratzon Hashem, and you're going to be sold down to Mitzrayim, you're going to go back on boats, and they're going to try to sell you as Avadim Shvachos, Ve'ein Kona! No one's going to buy you! There's no going back to being Avadim and Shvachos in Mitzrayim. There's no going back to being like everybody else. Those are divrei nechama, as jarring as it is. It's divrei nechama. The nechama is that we wouldn't even be wanted as slaves in Mitzrayim because there's no going back from our unique kedushas Yisrael. Chaim Shmulevitz used to say that there's a sixth level of creation, a ben yeshiva, that somebody who is zocha to yeshiva education has to conduct himself on a certain. On a certain madrega. He has to carry himself differently, and when he fails to do so, he dips below someone who's not a ben yeshiva, to have an appreciation of the opportunities that we have. And that's also part of the Tocha. Tachas shel avadta, why does all this happen? Tachas shel avadta, Hashem lekecha, b'simcha v'tov lev, merov kol. Right? What's the merov kol? So pashut pshat, merov kol means that we have many, many opportunities. If we don't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we have all of these incredible opportunities, the ability, the incredible spiritual opportunities that we've been provided with, as well as, you know, we live in a generation that is that has a unique level of material rov kol. It's really unmatched in Jewish history. Like, I don't know, I don't think there ever was, like, a Five Towns and a Teaneck and a Los Angeles and, anywhere else in Jewish history. We can't fathom sometimes the poverty that our just a few generations ago that our grandparents, great-grandparents, and earlier suffered, the challenges that they faced. But sometimes instead of enjoying it, we complain. Instead of using it all to serve Hashem, we complain. Someone was just telling me last night that they were making a chasna for one of their children, and they were standing outside the shul after davening on Shabbos morning, and someone came up to them and said, how's it going? How's the wedding plans? How's everything going? And they said, it took us like a nanosecond to go right into kvetching mode. Oh, that's so expensive, and it's this, and it's that. And the person stopped and said, wait a second, are you happy with the shidduch? Yeah, lovely shidduch. get along with the mechutanim? Yeah, it's a chiddush, right? You know, normally when people are planning a wedding, it's not that people are bad people or one side is bad and the other side is good. It's just that everybody's out of their minds, right? When if you've ever been involved in wedding planning, which I guess about half of you have been, like no one is normal. They're just like everyone's just completely out of their minds at that time. There's nichnas baruach shtus, like to a madrega that hopefully they'll never go back to, but the person said, like, come on, you're complaining. You know, we have rov kol. It's ridiculous to be complaining. You know, there was a guy who was with the Kleisenberger Rebbe during the Holocaust. Kleisenberger Rebbe was a remarkable figure. He had this incredible, aside from being an enormous Talmud Chacham, a gon shebegaonim, he had this incredible ability to be mechazik people. So he was like uniquely given to that generation to help be mechazik people, and that's how he rebuilt sort of the chassidus, because people were so taken by him, and they were in a work camp and they had to schlep these heavy packages down 130 very steep stairs. I don't know if they're stairs or a ladder or something, and if you would slip, you'd fall to your death. And the Kleisenberger Rebbe would say the entire time under his breath, "Tachas Hashem avadti as Hashem elokecha b'simcha v'tov lev mirov kol," that he would understand that this is the fulfillment of the tochacha. And he saw everything in life, but that is our greatest nechama, that we're able to achieve a unique madrega. But achieving that unique madrega means that we recognize a certain sense of kedusha. It means that we see kedusha where it exists. We have to see kedusha in the Jewish people. We have to see kedusha in the Torah HaKadosha. I was talking to Rav Shechter yesterday. I finally bothered him, so he was all alone, and you know, finally learning, so I can't let that happen. So I bothered him with a whole bunch of questions. So one of the things he was telling me is that he said to his shir this week that you know, like when you're in elementary school, I guess depending on which school you went to, how when the sixth grade Rebbe or the fifth grade Rebbe reads the Gemara, he says, Zok de Heliga Gemara. You know, like when did that stop? When did the Heliga Gemara stop? And it's just, you know, the Talmud tells us, you know? How did that change? Well, where's the Hilga Rashi? Where's the Hilga Tosos? He says, or depending on what's called, Amar Rashi HaKadosh. I don't know what everyone's background is. By me, it was the Hilga Gemara. By you, maybe it was Amar Rashi HaKadosh. Either way, but where'd all that go? He said, maybe we need to bring that back. You know, maybe if people aren't appreciating the Kedusha that we have, the Kedusha of the Torah, and, you know, Torah is subject to just, you know, our modern sensibilities are on par or greater than, you know, maybe we should go back to just, you know, making that part of our daily shprach about the holiness of Torah, the holiness of Klal Yisrael, and the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this to us so that we can be elevated, so that we can live an elevated existence. And that, it sounds like a tochacha, but that tochacha ultimately is the greatest nechama, because it tells us the great potential of Klal Yisrael.